Hey, and welcome to the next Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski. I got my co-host here.
Hey, yo.
Carl Nadolski Jr. Today, we are going to be talking all about this idea of metabolically healthy obesity. Whether you can be healthy and still have obesity or have obesity and still be healthy, I guess is the, whatever.
Yeah.
All right. So here's the deal. Fitness circles on the internet. I got involved in the fitness world, and it's kind of a different world compared to the medical world. So I'm kind of like in this like fitness influencer space where there are doctors and kind of the doctory medical influencer type of social media world. It's a little bit different, but you still see some weight stigma regardless in both sides. And there will be people with obesity saying, hey, you know, I'm struggling to lose weight. I'm just trying my best, but like I'm maintaining and trying to be healthy and it looks like my health markers are fine. And people in the comments will say, no, you're not fine. You're still obese. We would say they would still have obesity, but whatever. You're still obese and you are going to die early. And so you need to lose weight. And they're like, well, I've already tried. And like, I feel pretty good where I am right now. So we're going to kind of, dance around this topic. Actually, we're not going to dance it. We're going to wrestle it.
Well, first of all, speaking of wrestling it in the fitness industry, it's not just the fitness world. I mean, this controversy is obviously the data are published in the medical world.
Yeah.
And there's controversies amongst doctors, dietitians, nurses,
researchers,
and fitness professionals, the researchers. Yeah. And so, you know, it's our job to try to bring this back to a relatively practical application to real life. Like, what does it all mean, Basil? That's like, yeah. So what? Yeah. So is it true? Can anybody have excess adiposity, obesity, and be okay? Or is there a gray area and a spectrum and individuality that we often come back to?
So in these kind of discussions, I always come back to talking about what's the definition of health anyway? You have the definition of health pulled up. Some people will say it's the absence of disease, but the WHO will say, no, there's multiple parts of health, spiritual, physical, you know, metabolic, whatever, mental, multiple components of health, multiple spheres of health to where you can have varying degrees. And like my brother said, kind of a spectrum. So I think if you look at, I don't think there's anybody that's 100% healthy, because I think a lot of us have some mental demons going on that we may not show, but like that's part of it. Mental health is another thing that we may not have a biomarker for.
Yeah. Talk about holistic care, holistic health, or the whole person. We, you know, everything matters.
So we're going to be specifically though talking about physical and like metabolic physiological health. Because honestly, you know, you could be in peak performance shape and still have some, like we said, some demons going on mentally. And it's really hard to test that from an objective, like really objective. Like we can't scan somebody and take some blood and go, oh, that person is suffering from this. You would never know unless they have a real deep dive into their psyche. But
and on the other hand, though, we do at the end, I think we need to go beyond just what we're going to talk about in the metabolic health aspect, because, you know, there are all these other aspects of obesity that increase risk of other types of diseases. And some of it's not metabolic, but we'll get to that too.
Yeah. That's why I mentioned the physical, like kind of the mass effect, but we will get into some of the mental stuff too, but anyway. Okay. So
yeah, first of all, I still think one, if you haven't listened to our initial podcast on the diagnosis of obesity. What is obesity? You probably need to listen to that first before we even get into this.
Yeah.
But to review, essentially, obesity is defined as excess abnormal adiposity that essentially causes harm. And so in that context, where does this concept even come from? Can you have excess adiposity that doesn't cause harm, and not just a snapshot in time, you know, like when you're 20 years old and you have excess adiposity, but what are the long-term risks of that excess adiposity? And so where do these data even come from? Well,
just to pull back for a second, what's funny when you say, can you be healthy with excess adiposity? So I made this comment on TikTok. I'm now a TikToker. I was only an Instagram or Facebooker.
And TikTok is the dumpster fire of misinformation, by the way.
It's a dumpster fire. So someone goes, isn't that circular logic? Obviously, if it's excess adiposity, it's going to be harmful. Because if it were just normal adiposity, it wouldn't be harmful. And I was like, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's maybe why. That's not a bad response.
No. I couldn't even. Sometimes I'm like, you stupid son. But I was actually like, it was an insightful comment.
But what that really leads to is, how do we know, or what are the data that say what is excess adiposity?
Exactly.
And of course, that goes back to, how do we measure it? These things called anthropometrics. That's height, weight. We're going to talk about body mass index, waist circumference, that predicts the visceral adiposity, that increases what we're talking about, specifically that cardiometabolic risk. The risk of things like high blood pressure, bad lipids, dysglycemia or diabetes, heart disease, and mortality is really what this specific topic is all about. And so despite BMI not being perfect for an individual, on a population basis, going back to that first podcast we had, we know that increased BMI generally reflects excess adiposity and generally in pretty good what they call J-shaped curves. So, you know, the lowest mortality death rate in these long-term trials is usually in that, you know, BMI of like 24, 25. But of course, going back to the other discussion we had, it depends on ethnicity. People with Asian ethnicities have more bad adiposity, bad health at lower BMI. So we have these different cutoffs. And then people with different diseases, elderly, that can shift a little bit more to the right. But even within each of those BMI categories, as we talked about with the waist circumference that reflects that visceral adiposity, there are linear relationships within each of those, even the low BMIs and the high BMIs, for specifically mortality. It's one of my favorite slides. I probably mentioned it in the other one. And so this concept of metabolically healthy obesity, unfortunately, is on a foundation of a BMI-centric approach. So it's like, well, can you have an elevated BMI that is generally consistent with obesity, but still be metabolically healthy? That's kind of the basis.
Right. Can you have a higher body fat percentage? Let's say it's over 30, if we're going by DEXA, over 30, whatever percent. But, and also BMI, let's say you're in the 30s.
Yeah. 30s, 40s.
Did you say 40s? You did say 40s. Yeah. Can you still have those and still be metabolically healthy? The answer is technically yes.
Right. It's especially in a snapshot in time.
Right.
So there are tons of different studies. And the reason there are controversies, basically because there's no really good standardization for the definition of what it counts as metabolically healthy obesity. So it's generally a high BMI. So one, you could have a high BMI and, you know, relatively high BMI, but be very muscular and great, fantastic fitness condition, and actually have low. Yeah. Okay. There we go.
I used to be a high BMI. I'm like 26.
Yeah, but we're in the overweight categories, generally speaking. But we have low body fat percentages and we try to stay in pretty good physical fitness shape. And we're going to talk about how that plays a role, of course. But yeah, a high BMI, you can have a high BMI for muscle, not from adiposity. So that's why it's a clinical diagnosis anyways. So that already is a problem with these studies that look at metabolically healthy obesity. Then a lot of the long-term studies that end up concluding that, well, people who are metabolically healthy, oftentimes some studies will say, well, they still have increased risk of earlier cardiovascular disease and earlier death. But then it turns out when you split the hairs, they were actually including people with high blood pressure or high triglycerides or prediabetes, but they were only including one component of what we call the traditional criteria for metabolic syndrome: high triglycerides, low good cholesterol, HDL, prediabetes or type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure. Sometimes they do or don't include waist circumference or other measurements. And we can talk about some of the specific studies as examples, but the more minimal criteria that people meet, first of all, hardly any of these big cohorts even have people who have truly healthy obesity. That's part of the key.
Yeah. Well, my brother's saying is that these people that allegedly went on to, oh, it's a dynamic process. They go on to develop cardiovascular disease anyway. They were not metabolically healthy in the first place. That's what my brother's saying. If you have high blood pressure, if you have one component of metabolic syndrome, you're not metabolically healthy. The thing is this cluster for metabolic syndrome, having three components, that's what they made it the key definition for metabolic syndrome. But if you have any one of those components, you're really not metabolically healthy. And even still, some of the cutoffs are probably not low enough, like triglycerides. If you have a triglyceride over 100 that's not genetically predisposed, probably insulin resistant. And the cutoff is usually 150.
Right. So, but on the other hand, you got to think about what are the outcomes they're looking for. So those who have a little bit of metabolic abnormal health, again, depends on age, fitness levels that we're going to talk about, and go on. And what are they measuring? All these studies are looking at cardiovascular death, mortality, et cetera. And so there are other problems. So if you look at, say, Tim Garvey's cardiometabolic disease staging, well, the people who had really zero metabolic risk factors, they still went on to develop some of those metabolic risk factors and ultimately still had an increased risk of diabetes, but not necessarily increased cardiovascular mortality, as I recall in that study. And so that's why there are plenty of these studies where they look at metabolically healthy, true healthy, and there are very low percentages. And we can talk about some examples, but in a young cohort of people who have obesity but are metabolically healthy, it's generally thought of now as a transient state. So if they stay with excess adiposity or obesity over many, many years, then they develop these cardiometabolic problems and they're not metabolically healthy. And then if we follow them longer, there probably is increased maybe risk of cardiovascular disease and death. But there's a spectrum and an individual heterogeneity, and fitness does play a huge role in it, by the way.
So here's a fun little story for you guys. Y'all, I should say y'all listening.
You only started saying that after you got on social media, by the way.
No, that's after I moved to North Carolina. I'm a Southern boy.
Nope.
Our heel. I'm not a Yankee anymore.
That's your social media.
Well, I'm pretty sure you're supposed to. I don't know. Anyway, you say, so here's a funny little story. I moved to San Diego back in 2018, and there's an epidemiology program there that I actually tried to get into. I was allowed into one of them, and I wanted to do the other one, but they convinced me to do another one. It doesn't really matter. I got into epidemiology and really wanted to follow this metabolically healthy obesity data. And there were some of these big time researchers in this, like right at my university. And I said, okay, this is who I am. I have a blue check on Instagram. No, they didn't care about that. They don't care about that. In academia, they don't give a damn. This is who I am. They're like, I don't know who you are, but I'm like, I got a good Instagram, I promise. But I said, this is what I want to do. And I explained, I go, look, I have to be careful because I'm like, I'm pretty sure you didn't do the study right. Here I am. I don't know anything about epidemia. No, I know a little bit, right? I know a little bit to be dangerous, I suppose. Took a few classes, stayed at a Holiday and whatever you want to say. But it's like, look, just from a clinical aspect, these people that you included as being metabolically healthy and obesity in the beginning, they weren't really metabolically healthy. And so your conclusions are a little bit off, in my clinical opinion. You know, I tagged my brother. I'm like, my brother is the greatest endocrinologist. He agrees with me. He's the head of endocrinology of the world, basically. And what's so funny, I go, so here's what we want to do. My brother who knows nothing about epidemiology, and I want to look at this cohort. Because so here's an interesting thing. I did a video on this, but cohort studies, they take a big, huge population. Ideally, it's in the thousands. And they start them at some point in time. They get all their labs, they do all their measurements, And then they follow them over years and they kind of see what happens to them. They can figure out, you know, risks of certain diseases. They can see other characteristics, nutrition, whatever. And they follow them and see what happens. So that's what they do with these cohorts, looking at metabolically healthy obesity. So I said, look, these in your little cohort that you looked at, you included people that they actually weren't metabolically healthy. So we need to look at truly metabolically healthy obesity. They have to have zero components of metabolic syndrome.
Do you remember the cohort? Because this we really tried to propose a analysis.
It was MESA.
It was MESA. That's right. Yeah.
Which actually is smaller than some of the other ones. It's only like 5,000 people, but it's a really powerful for subclinical.
This is a really important point that we can reiterate with data.
This is funny because we don't know what the hell we're doing. But we clinically.
Oh, no, we do. We just didn't know the numbers.
So I said, run the numbers. And they go, that's impossible. And I was like, why? Because there were so few that were actually metabolically healthy.
It was too close to zero. There weren't it.
On the statistical analyses to make it even powered to be able to do anything with it, they had to include one or two components of metabolic syndrome.
Yeah.
In which case, then of course those people are going to go on to have metabolic syndrome and be at risk for cardiovascular disease. So to me, I was like, this doesn't make any sense. So my brother talking about one of these other cohorts that his colleague, Dr. Garvey had, I don't remember which one it was, the Dallas.
The one specifically that I'm referring to was the Eric study.
Eric study, right? It was much bigger because it's MESA was like 5,000.
I don't remember the numbers from it.
I believe it was much bigger. And they had, and the other thing is it depends on the average age. Because, you know, as you age,
What I was saying. If they're young and you know, into fitness, that's holding that metabolic health at bay. That helps. But if we start looking at older, you know, and less muscle, less, you know, less fitness, you know, and again, in our conclusion, we're going to talk about fitness is a big deal to stave off metabolic unhealth.
Basically, I'm going to shill for LiftRx. Please go to LiftRx.com and join my program. I'm going to get you.
You really are a shill for LiftRx, but I'm a shill for lifting. And I suppose it's a conflict of interest for me to be a shill for LiftRx too, but it's important. It really is.
Sailboat will have sales of LiftRx right in the top there.
I think the conclusion of what you were talking about is that these publications need to be careful about how they are communicated. Because when they say, well, you know, metabolically healthy still increases your risk of cardiovascular disease, well, that may be true in the long run, but then it skews the results and doesn't communicate it correctly.
Yeah, people feel bad about having their obesity anyway. So like, and no, we don't want to just, you know, cover up facts, but I think we should at least be somewhat truthful about, like, if you truly have zero components and you're working out hard and doing your best to keep your weight down and doing all the other helpful components of life, I think you're going to do better than if you weren't to do those things. So that's kind of the gist.
Yeah. And so some of the bottom line from the data, and there have been a couple more studies that have come out in the past year or two, but, you know, really, you know, excess adiposity over time is probably not a transient state. You probably develop more metabolic health problems and thus increased risk of, you know, cardiovascular disease and mortality. But the worse it is that you start off on increases that risk sooner from what we can tell. There are increases in risk of diabetes and there are increases in risk in non-cardiometabolic disease also. And so we have to, you know, be aware of those things. And so, you know, I guess in conclusion, you know, metabolic health of obesity is relatively unstable. You know, it's a dynamic state, and there are several influencing factors like age. So if you're younger, you're going to have better metabolic health than if you're older. If you have more muscle, better metabolic health. Less muscle, worse metabolic health. You know, dietary quality might play a role despite the adiposity and energy balance that we've discussed. So, you know, Mediterranean diets, et cetera, that improve cardiovascular risk. Physical activity that we've talked about. Cardiorespiratory fitness, very important. That's always an influential factor on all these metabolically healthy obesity studies. And we know that regardless of your weight, BMI, you know, it is what's on the inside that counts. So if you improve you know, some of the dietary quality, improve your fitness and all that stuff, and improve these metabolic syndrome risk factors and improve cardiometabolic health, well, then you're going to reduce your risk of future complications and disease. And then, of course, there's genetics. You know, I don't even think we mentioned genetics, but that's the individuality of this whole thing. You know, everyone has different genetics. So people are going to store their fat differently. That gets into the waist circumference. All these little factors add up. And it is why we treat obesity. You know, obesity also increases risk of cancers. You know, we talk about sleep apnea, knee arthritis, these things that have nothing to do with real cardiometabolic health per se, and weight loss can reduce those problems. But you know, maybe that's a topic for another day. But you know, certainly I think the medical establishment, whatever, healthcare researchers, we do need to harmonize these definitions, because yeah, there are some people who will say, well, but then I measured this little criteria of the insulin resistance index, and that's like hardly anything. There are some people who try to say that a lower A1C has to be the cutoff, but you know, the point of limiting returns, you don't really get much more benefit from, you know, dropping that down. But the basic metabolic health components can help us stage the severity of disease and how aggressive we need to be in treating it, which is how we use it clinically, I think.
There could be, you know, there's one other thing, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is something.
Yeah, that's another one.
we'd have to, again, ultrasound everybody and MRI, CT, whatever, ultrasound. Well,
here's a little teaser. There's going to be a guideline coming out that I helped write for non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and NASH coming out soon and how to screen for it. So there are certain things that increase that risk, by the way. So obesity increases the risk. Metabolic syndrome components increase the risk. So we can look at these data all the same. You know, the more metabolic syndrome components you have, the longer over time you have them, the more adiposity you gain in genetics, the higher risk of fatty liver you have, and then the progression to type 2 diabetes, and they have a much higher risk of cirrhosis, essentially NASH, the steatohepatitis, the inflammatory part of it, progression to cirrhosis and hepatocellular carcinoma. So these are all different complications of obesity that we care about, but more metabolic health component problems at any given time increase the risk of the disease in the future. But it is a dynamic, transient state, and we need to try to prevent progression.
Yeah. For sure. So the gist is metabolically healthy obesity, it's relatively rare, but there are certain things like staying as fit as possible, being a little bit younger. We can't control time, unfortunately.
Can't control our genetics.
Just, you know, I love acceptance-based therapy. Accept what you can control, control what you can't control, control what you can. Do your best. If you need help with, you know, medicines, we have medicines available. We're going to do our podcast all about the medicines and helping with weight loss. But don't get too upset about seeing some of these headlines that you see. You know, just do the best you can. I don't know. I feel like some people use it to shame people, and it's like, well,
there's that. And then on the other extreme, there's that, no offense to these people necessarily, but the healthy at every size thing. You know, that creates the opposite of some of the, you know, it's like, no, there's risk. Some people have more risk, and we need to treat everybody without bias, without stigma, and understand these health risks that include a very holistic aspect to it. Not only cardiometabolic health, but other health problems from mechanical to cancers and mental.
Yep.
Absolutely.
All right. Any other concluding remarks? I think that probably covers it for metabolically healthy obesity. You can have it, but relatively rare, and it can change into metabolically unhealthy obesity down the line, but you can just do the best you can. I don't know. That doesn't.
That's all, folks.
All right. Subscribe, tell your friend, share with a friend, share with somebody you think this would help with. And we'll chat next time.
Yeah.